Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout. Hope everybody is doing okay. As I'm recording this, the election counts are still coming in, and it seems as though our nation is still more divided than ever. The fight for social justice is long from over, and we have a ton of healing to do. Luckily for us, at least we have the music of the Coltranes, Alice and John, that can help us get through these tumultuous times. One beacon of light, a resilient star on the alto saxophone, championing the Coltrane legacy, is Lakeisha Benjamin. It was really supposed to be a banner year for her, presenting her critically acclaimed recording, Pursuance, the Coltranes, and touring it around the world. But her year really turned out to be a dud for obvious reasons. And she'll give us an inside window into her thoughts, kind of like a running diary of 2020, and I imagine there are a lot of jazz musicians can relate to her. With all that said, things are looking a little brighter for Lakeisha, at least in the short term. She'll be performing for the first time with a live band since the middle of March, and all of this will be happening this Friday, November 6th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at the Berlin Jazz Fest in Brooklyn. And if you go to our website at wbgo.org, you can watch the live stream. Another edition of My Music with Lakeisha Benjamin is next.
Hi, my name is Lakeisha Benjamin. I'm a saxophonist, bandleader, educator, and you're listening to My Music on The Checkout. I think with this album, Pursuance the Coltranes, my goal was to give my interpretation and my take on, you know, these classic, very famous pieces. When I first set out to do it, I tried to imagine as if when I'm composing the songs and we're in the studio recording them, as if John and Alice Coltrane were in the recording booth watching it. And I was presenting this to them, to like, hey, this is a gift to you. You know, what would it be like to record a giant, massive, like, tribute and, like, honor for John and Alice Coltrane, since to me, they've represented kind of like the most amazing power couple that ever lived in jazz, in terms of musically, spiritually, professionally. That was my initial goal. And in July, I went over to the New School to talk to Reggie Workman. I wanted somebody that kind of knew their personalities and their feelings on music, so that if I know why John Coltrane wrote A Love Supreme, if he sat down and told Reggie, this is why I wrote Naima, I would have more insight than I could ever have about in terms of making these arrangements, in terms of the proper chord changes. He played with both John and Alice Coltrane. I could say, is this E minor? He knows exactly if it's E minor or not. He agreed that, you know, he would help me. It was amazing. And then he mentioned to me that he had won the NEA Jazzmaster Award. So of course we're in there celebrating, having a good time. He said he got tenure at the New School. I was just so excited. And then I stopped for a second and I thought, is it going to take me 82 years to win an NEA Jazz Award? Is it kind of like I just have to be the last person alive to win this thing? And he kind of laughed. And I was like, oh, and he kind of laughed, but also said, yeah, it's going to take you that long. And I was like, oh, man. So I got a little depressed within that. And then out of nowhere, I literally had an epiphany. I said, hey, Reggie, what if we get all of your friends that are in your age group to be on part of this project so that people don't have to wait until they're 82? So I came home, I made a whole blackboard full of every living musician that had either played with John or Alice Coltrane that was alive, whether I knew them or not. And then I made a list of all of the people that I respect and admire. And I kind of saw the correlation there between the people that were between 70 and 90 that had played with John and Alice Coltrane and the people that were between 50 and 70 that I had looked up to when they were young lions. And I wasn't sure how I was going to get together with everybody. I wasn't sure how I was going to finance it. A lot of the people on my list, I did not know. So I was going to have to, you know, hunt them down. I've hunted everybody down and we finally record this thing. And we do it in 2 12-hour days at the Bunker Studio in Brooklyn. None of the special guests knew the music before they came to the studio. So it means that they were going to have to learn the song at the studio, record it, and they were only going to get a couple takes because I have another plethora of musicians coming. So we started the first day off with Gary Bartz. So Gary Bartz came in at 8 o'clock in the morning. We moved on to Greg Osby and Bruce. Then we had Jasmia Horn coming. Then we had Ron Carter. Reggie was there the whole time because he's the producer, but he was moving in and out. There were days where the string players were coming in. There was a time where we recorded with at least 20 musicians at the same time. It was just back-to-back people, and of course, you know, jazz musicians don't come necessarily on time. Brian Blade was recording next door with his band, so he was in and out with them. It was just like, I think, one of the most miraculous experiences I've had as a musician in terms of all those people gathered in all those generations. I'm not aware of any album where Reggie Workman and Ron Carter are on, and now I am aware of one. Hi, my name is Lakeisha Benjamin, and you're listening to Pursuance off of my album Pursuance, The Coltranes. To me, that was like a highlight in terms of accomplishing a dream in my life. Like, I have a feeling that if someone else had thought of this idea and put this whole thing together, they would never have called me for the CD. Nobody would have been like, you know who's perfect for John and Alice Coltrane? Lakeisha Benjamin. After doing the first show, it was like a real highlight to know that, like, how inspiring the music was for me to play it. So I was excited for just a Coltrane year. We did Winter Jazz Fest. Booking agents were completely excited. Everything was revving up. February, we started the pre-release tour. I did do the NBA All-Star Game. It was just kind of moving forward. I got to Europe and we were, you know, Poland was, I mean, we were getting standing ovations after every song. We were scheduled after Poland to go to Blue Note Milan. The night before we're supposed to go, the piano player tells me to turn on the TV. And we see something coronavirus, but it's in Polish. And I'm like, what am I looking at? What is this? Is that the China virus thing out there? And he's like, yeah, that's the plague that they have in China. And I said, oh, it's in, where is it now? And he goes, it's in Milan. So I immediately pause and go, oh, man. So he's like, you think they're going to cancel the show? And I'm like, honestly, by the time they would need to cancel the show, if there was an outbreak, we'd be there and probably backed. We had another gig in Poland. We'll be back in Poland before this even happens. He tells me, I think they're going to cancel the show and you should prepare not to go. So in the morning, we're scheduled to fly out at 9 a.m. So we have to leave at 4 a.m. I turn on the news again and I'm seeing that they're having Fashion Week. I'm also supposed to play a couple shows for Fashion Week. And I see that the virus has overnight gone from 100 people to 500 people. We're arriving the day before the show, so we have a day off. So I tell the band, you know what? Do not leave. I'm going to tell the agents that we missed our flight. And that way, if anything does happen, we can always fly the next day. So we all stay in the hotel. We don't leave. I go back and take a nap. Around 3 p.m., the piano player is banging on my door, banging on my door. I'm upset at that situation, but he shows me his phone, and the mayor of Milan has announced that they are shutting down the entire city. Fashion Week is over. Everybody goes home. And then someone at the festival in Poland tells me that there's a case of it in Poland, in the exact city that I'm in. Really excited to get out of Europe and come back to America, because we're like, you know, in our mind, this is a safe place. We got to go back to America. It'll all be good. But I get back to New York. I'm excited about my album release. I'm getting my hair done, getting everything ready. I have all of my guests from the album coming to the CD release party. It's going to be March 11th and March 12th at Dizzy's. And on the 9th, when I get back, the first case of COVID is in New York. So now I'm kind of like this thinking this thing is following me around, but I definitely don't think it's going to be a huge thing. I just think it's going to be a problem. People are texting me, is your show still happening? It's sold out, but now, you know, people are going to drop out. We end up doing the show. At the end of the show, I'm signing CDs. Nobody's social distancing. We're all hugging. We're having a good time. At the end of the show, the same piano player from Poland comes up to me and I see him and start thinking, oh no. And he tells me that the NBA has shut down. Because some of the players have the virus. And that was the last time I've hung out with a group of people. That March 9th, kind of through the 20-something, was a crucial time in people getting the coronavirus that I knew. So it seemed like with the incubation period, now that we were in April, they were really starting to become sick and get the effects. That's when I started to really think that the severity, I already took it seriously, but I started to think that this was something overwhelming, because people I know that had gotten it hadn't done anything out the norm. They, you know, went to rehearsal, or they, you know, took the train somewhere. So that people were getting it and they couldn't pinpoint how and why. And in my friend circle, it didn't matter if they were 20 or 70, they were becoming very, very ill. And while that was happening, I want to say 2 to 3 jazz legends per day were dying. And they were dying out the blue. And while they were dying, you would hear that their friends in their circle had come down with it. So you knew that even though someone died on Monday, potentially next Monday, the next batch were in line to pass as well. And because I had just did this project with so many legends and people that I look up to, and the idea was to give them, you know, homage and tribute while they're still here, I immediately dawned on me that almost half of my project is at risk to getting the coronavirus and it taking them out. Those were morbid thoughts I was having, but I had at that point taken real solace in not necessarily the music of writing, but performing. I started doing a lot of videos online and, you know, duplicating myself and making harmony and just trying to stay completely creative. And I think that did wonders for me. But I also think that this COVID stuff kind of goes in phases. Thank you. My name is Lakeisha Benjamin, and you're listening to my music on The Checkout. In the height of madness, the jazz musicians were dying day by day. And then just when I thought that was overwhelming and I was, you know, I'm so used to being a fighter. So if I have an album to promote and I have to do music and whatever, music is my sanctuary. So I'm just pushing forward online and using my social media platform to create. And then that's when the United States starts with the social justice deaths. And every day now I'm watching people die, and it's not because of COVID. I definitely was born and raised in Washington Heights, and they lynched somebody in Washington Heights. So I opened the newspaper and I'm like, are they lynching people in Washington Heights? Or whoever did it, we don't know. It's ruled as a suicide. I don't know anybody in Washington Heights going around hanging themselves from trees. I always associate lynchings with the South. You know, that's a terrible stereotype, you know. If I read somebody got lynched, I'm just waiting to read Alabama or Mississippi or something, you know. So to know that it was in Washington Heights and Inwood, where I'm from, I was like, whoa. Because I completely know the landscape. I completely know the territory. I know exactly where it was. I can't see it being possible. And then even when that woman called the cops on the guy in Central Park, to me, that just made it clear to me that I can't just read about this and ignore it. It's like in my city. I could have easily been there. The place around Central Park, she was like, you know, close to Lincoln Center. I'm like, I could have been right there. It could have totally been me. So at that point in time, I just was like, my motivation to create music did kind of, I would say, slack off then, because I guess I'm such a free spirit and, like, you know, in nirvana of, like, you know, this utopian, everyone's one, we all love each other, that I didn't realize that how the effect that would have on me to be watching, to be scared that I might get taken out by a virus. I have to shelter myself in the house, but also be scared that if I do go outside, are the cops going to stop me and shoot me? So the combination of just the fear of my mortality was making it hard for me to focus on music. But as time has passed by, these two concerns are still very prevalent. So it's my natural inclination to write, you know, how I'm feeling, but I have been a little hesitant because I don't like to write anything that just lingers on the pain. I like to write something that this is the pain I was in, and the emotion I'm expressing is a way to help somebody else, because I don't just want to express the rage and anger, because those are reactionary emotions anyway. If you're angry and enraged, you're really just hurt. So I would rather write about the hurt. Common story is, you know, this is an amazing time for you. Everything's going amazing with this album. I don't really see how it's so amazing. I'm sitting in my apartment locked away. I can't do any of the gigs. I spent all of my savings on this album. I spent all of my time and energy to at least tour my project and have this year. So that's taken away from me. I love interviews. I love talking to people. And these are supposed to be magical moments for me. Everyone in the interview is like, how are you doing with COVID? And I'm like, how do you think I'm doing, brother? I don't say that, but it is a lot of pressure because you have to maintain professionalism of people like, you know, how are you doing? How are you hanging in there? And, you know, I know they don't feel this way, but they don't want you to say, it sucks, it's miserable, I'm depressed every day. Hopefully I make it to December. That's not what they want to hear. They just want to hear a positive message for the audience that's listening, because hopefully you can be some inspiration to them, because as a musician, that's my job, to inspire people. So I've been preparing this whole year to introduce this album to the world. And finally, you know, my guests are going to get what they deserve. And at the, you know, for me, awards are nice. Accolades are nice. This is the first year that I've kind of gotten those kind of things. So my most exciting thing for me is to be on the stage, interacting with the audience and the fans, and kind of evangelistic style, like spreading the word. That's how I do the best. If I can be out on the streets, on the ground level with the people from different nationalities, different countries. To me, that is nothing like playing the Coltranes for people in China, people in India, people in South Africa, people in Europe, and getting that, you know what I mean? Getting a dose of their culture and them to directly feel, because I feel that's what the Coltranes were trying to do. Their trips to Japan, their trips to India, they were trying to learn as much as possible. So that kind of halted all that. So right now I'm in a weird place, because most people online are like, Lakeisha Benjamin, you're killing it, you're doing so amazing, everything must feel so amazing to you. But I'm such a social person, and I haven't interacted with another person, so I'm very isolated right now. You know, I feel like if I was to encounter people, I don't know how to interact with them or talk to them. There is the trauma of how I feel with all the deaths that have passed. And because, unfortunately, as a nation, I don't particularly think we're handling this COVID virus in a healthy way. So I'm forced to prepare myself for another wave to come of people I know passing. I have an aunt that had surgery from it with some heart trouble, you know, so I can't say that the worst has come yet, because I did a video doctor appointment for some allergies, and I had a negative COVID test. But I asked the doctor, what are we going to do in the winter when, you know, we can't tell if my allergies are a cold, the flu, COVID, pneumonia. And when a medical professional person looks at you like, I don't know, that was scary. So I'm not sure that we're out of the woods yet, and we're all good. And for somebody in my status, I could just easily go to Europe, and I have tours already booked. I could do my tours, but now I'm banned to the U.S. and my fate is tied to the will of Americans, you know. So I would say, long story short, I have experienced a lot of emotions. Sometimes I'm happy, like, oh yeah, Downbeat finally recognized me, it's amazing. My agents are like, oh, we have to submit the CD for the Grammys. I'm like, oh, there are Grammys? It's just like, it's a lot, I think, to maintain, and a lot of emotions to process. And I think, you know, when coronavirus is long gone, everyone that lived through this time period will still be processing how they felt, because we're all on survival mode now. It's not till it ends do you really get a chance to assess your emotions. I'm Lakeisha Benjamin. Thank you for listening to my music on The Checkout.
All of the music that you're hearing on today's program is from Lakeisha Benjamin's recording, Pursuance, The Coltranes, and we hope you will go out and buy it and support artists like Lakeisha Benjamin. And remember, she is performing at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Friday at Roulette in Brooklyn with Sharnay Wade on vocals, Zakai Curtis on piano, Lonnie Plasco on bass, and Daryl Green on drums. And if you go to our website at wbgo.org, you can watch the live stream. Again, 10 a.m. Friday, Roulette in Brooklyn. Continue to support live music and continue to support programs like The Checkout by giving us a review wherever you subscribe to the podcast, on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. Also, you can follow us on social media at Checkout Jazz is our Twitter handle. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.